where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 trying to increase the power.
Hi friends, Vic Sage here, and welcome back to the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. Our little bit of audio trivia at the end of the last episode didn't fool any of you. Today, we will be taking a look at Namco's classic 1982 underground maze game, Dig Dug. By the way, when this episode goes live, it will be the 26th of the month. Those of you that frequent the Retro West often know that this is the fan pick day of every month, known as Atari Day. That was started a couple years ago by the good folks over at Atari.io. I will be sure to include a link to their site on the Retro West post for this episode. I picked today because while Namco developed Dig Dug and released it in Japan, it was Atari that handled the distribution for North America and Europe. Dig Dug was a game I first encountered, not at the fabled Showbiz Pizza of my youth, but while I was visiting my cousins one summer. It was at a little burger joint in Searcy, Arkansas. Altogether, this arcade maybe had around 30 games. It was a nice little family-friendly place, and I can still smell those burgers on the grill. For what it's worth, I did already know about Dig Dug, and that was thanks to Joystick Magazine. When my uncle and grandfather drove my cousins and myself to this place, I was pretty amazed when we pulled up to see the arcade had painted video game icons on the outsides of their windows. For what it's worth, this is something we have also done at the Arcadia Retrocade, the arcade I have the privilege of working at. At that arcade in Searcy, they had Mario, Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, the ships from Zaxxon and Defender, Space Invaders, as well as a Pooka from Dig Dug on the windows. It was a fun afternoon, and it certainly is a memory that I cherish. Not just because of getting hooked on Dig Dug. The entire time we were visiting my cousins, we played the Buckner and Garcia Pac-Man Fever album almost non-stop. Of course, I did play Dig Dug a lot when I got back home. And that was at my Showbiz Pizza. And I will say that in my youth, it was probably in my top 10 arcade games of all time. I definitely enjoyed it far more than I did Universal's Mr. Do. But we will come back to that a little later in the show. Here is something that I've mentioned on the show more than once. It's odd when doing research and you realize there are just gaps in these records, or at least the ones I have access to. For example, who was the lead designer on Dig Dug? I have no idea. None. Looking on more than a few bastions of knowledge on the internet has led to nothing. I can, of course, tell you that in 1982, Namco had a few arcade hits on their hands, such as Pole Position, Xevious, Super Pac-Man, and Pac-Man Plus. In fact, it was the world-shattering success of their 1980 Pac-Man that led to the development of Dig Dug. Granted, Dig Dug changed the style of Pac-Man's inspired maze game, allowing the player the freedom of digging through the stage, horizontally as well as vertically, crafting their own passageways as they wanted, at least in the boundaries of the stage screen. Now to be fair, Dig Dug wasn't the first arcade game to allow players to dig tunnels. There was 1981's The Adventures of Robbie Roto, which was produced by Bally Midway. And, in 1982, you also had The Pit by Century, and of course, Mr. Do. Speaking of, judging by online sources, Mr. Do came out anywhere from October of 1982 to December of that year, with those same online resources saying Dig Dug was released in April of 82 in Japan, with it hitting North America in May of 82. Granted, each of these games has its own style. I'm not in any way trying to say one of these classic games copied the other. Another thing of interest is that Dig Dug runs on Namco's Galaga hardware, named so for the game system being used on 1981's Galaga, obviously. But besides Dig Dug, Bosconian, Xevious, Super Zevius, and a good handful of hacks of Dig Dug, Galaga, as well as Zeviest, used the same hardware. In the case of Zevius and Super Zevius, the system was modified to provide support for a 129-color palette. I want to go on record right here and say that I have never heard of Super Zevius until doing the research for this show. Not sure how that is, but I'll look it up when I tackle the Zevius episode of this podcast. Friends, while I might not have been able to tell you who was on the development team that brought us Dig Dug, I can at least tell you that the memorable music used in the game was courtesy of Yuriko Kano, who lent her musical talents to many Namco games, not just Dig Dug, but Zevius, both the arcade and NES port. There was also Dragon Buster, Pac-Land, Baraduke, Dig Dug 2, and Pac-Mania, to name a few. Speaking of the music of Dig Dug, the designers included an interesting feature in which, while Dig Dug is moving in the game, the player is basically creating music. If the player stops moving Dig Dug, so too does the music. Dig Dug tasks 1 to 2 players, taking alternate turns, with guiding the titular character by way of a 4-way joystick, allowing movement up and down, as well as left and right, digging tunnels through the stratum of the stages in an attempt to destroy an infestation of Pookas and Fygars. While these are the only two foes a player will face, they are more than enough to keep you on your toes, especially in later levels where you will have to adopt certain techniques if you want to make it very far. Dig Dug, as I mentioned earlier, can move horizontally and vertically through the dirt. His only defense, besides natural elements like boulders, is his trusty air pump. When a player hits the pump button, Dig Dug will fire his hose a short length in the direction he is facing. If it connects with an enemy, it will allow the player to pump up their foe until it bursts. You only need 4 taps of the pump button, with the enemy swelling up with each blast of air, to destroy them. It's important to note a player doesn't have to blow up an enemy once he hits it with the pump. If you turn away from the bad guy and walk away, they will take a few seconds to deflate, the amount of time depending on how close you were to causing them to explode. After they've reverted back to their normal selves, they will continue on as usual. In fact, Dig Dug's pump can actually pass through the thin areas of dirt that separate the player and the Fygars as well as Pookas. If you inch up to these thin spots, you can hit the pump button and it will go through to the other side without having to actually dig through. This is something to remember as it will come in handy in the strategy of later levels. But bear in mind, the fire the Fygars belch out can do the exact same thing to Dig Dug. All of that might be clear as mud, so let me try to explain it a bit better. There are open areas of the game level where the bad guys start out, at the beginning of each stage. Dig Dug will start off in the middle of the screen, in an open, short tunnel. The Pookas and Fygars won't stay put for long in their own tunnels, or caverns, for very long, quickly moving through the dirt in an attempt to hunt down Dig Dug. This is what I'm talking about with the pump being able to reach through the thin walls of dirt that separates the player from the Fygars and Pookas. Those boulders I just mentioned are scattered about each stage and allow the player to crush pursuing enemies, or themselves if they aren't careful. The boulders will remain in place until a player digs underneath it, whether that be horizontally or vertically. As long as Dig Dug remains squarely under the boulder, it won't budge. Soon as he moves away from it, though, for a second, the boulder will shift back and forth, then plummet. If you can dig a nice tunnel up to one of these boulders, this is a great way to get some points, as it will crush everything beneath it as it plummets down that tunnel. Or if you're traveling horizontally underneath one, it does allow you a chance to crush the pursuers behind you, or those traveling up from below or above you. Now, the Pookas and Fygars aren't stupid. As soon as the game figures out what you're trying to do, they will take advantage of any open tunnels to get out of the way of said boulder. There is a bug in the game, by the way. If you manage to blow up and pop an enemy at the exact same time a boulder crushes Dig Dug, if you have any remaining lives, you will notice all the foes will have disappeared, allowing you to freely dig around the screen. You earn 10 points for every bit of dirt you dig through, So you can see how this helps drive up your score in a normal game. Here's the thing to remember if that interesting glitch ever happens to you. The only way to clear the stage is by triggering another boulder to drop. Otherwise, the game will just be stuck, needing a reset. This would be a good time to mention that both the Pukas and Fygars can travel through the dirt without digging. You can track their movement as they come at you from an undug area of the stage. While they are traveling this way, you can identify the Fygars with their evil silver eyes and sharp smiles, and the Pukas by their signature yellow-hued goggles. If Dig Dug ever comes in contact with an enemy, he will lose a life. Those boulders are an easy way to rack up some big points. If the boulder crushes one bad guy, you get 1,000 points. Two enemies will earn you 2,500 points. Three will get you 4,000 points. Four foes and you've earned 6,000 points. Catching five under the boulder is worth 8,000 points. Six and it's a whopping 10,000 points. Seven and your score has gone up 12,000 points. And if you smash eight foes under the boulder, you will earn a staggering 15,000 points. That many isn't easy, of course, but you can do it. I'm not that good, not by a long shot, but I have seen it done in person at the Arcadia Retrocade, and it's amazing to see a player pull it off. I may or may not have scared the guy who did it at Arcadia by yelling loudly. I couldn't help it. You don't get to see that kind of skill or luck every day, you know? Once a boulder drops and stops moving, it busts apart and is gone from the stage. Now, if you drop two boulders during a stage, which you totally should whether you hit a bad guy or not with it, you will be awarded with a vegetable bonus that appears in the center of the stage. Dig Dug has to move quickly though to get those bonus points before the vegetable disappears. The vegetables are only worth bonus points, but those points can gain you an extra life, so they are of import. Depending on how the arcade cabinet has been set up, you can earn an extra life at 20,000 points, then every 60,000 points after that. Real quick. In the first stage, the vegetable bonus is a carrot worth 400 points. Stage 2 is a 600-point turnip. Stage 3 is a mushroom for 800 points. Stages 4 and 5 have a 1,000-point cucumber. Stages 6 and 7 feature a 2,000-point eggplant. Stages 8 and 9 have a 3,000-point green pepper. Stages 10 and 11 offer a tomato for 4,000 points. Stages 12 and 13 will give you some garlic worth 5,000 points. Stages 14 and 15 have a juicy watermelon and 6,000 points. A Galaxian appears in stages 16 and 17 and will grant you 7,000 bonus points. And on stages 18 and up, you can nab a pineapple for a whopping 8,000 bonus points. I think it's time to talk a bit about those enemies in Dig Dug. First up are the Puka. While they are deadly, they're also incredibly cute, resembling nothing more than a round red ball with yellow goggles and feet. Within the tunnels and open areas underground, the Pukas are a tad faster than Dig Dug is, which becomes a real problem when more than one of them are hot on your trail, which will happen. Sometimes, resulting in the player having to face the Pukas or Fygars coming in alternate directions all at once. This is when you have to learn how to use what has been called the pump stall technique. Here's how that works. Say you have two Pukas coming at you. You turn and start airing up the first Puka. His companion will just pass right on by his friend and run right into you, costing you a life. With the pump stall technique, you can hit that first enemy, pump it up once or twice, break the connection by moving away, and hit the second one and do the same. Then you can safely run through them both while they are deflating. Obviously, this can take a little getting used to, but it will let you escape some very hairy situations. The Fygars look like green dragons, and while the Pukas are deadly thanks to their speed and sometimes traveling in packs, it is the stream of fire these Fygars blast at you that make them so deadly. They thankfully aren't as quick as the Pukas, but the reach of that stream of fire makes that a very small comfort indeed. At the very least, they are only able to shoot flames horizontally and not vertically. That doesn't mean they won't zip upwards or down through a tunnel to take you out personally. The Fygars do telegraph when they're going to breathe fire, by pausing and flashing once or twice. Perhaps due to their fiery temperament, they will also have a tendency in later stages to not even try to escape. They will just try to hunt down Dig Dug as quick as possible. When you've cleared a stage of all but two foes, the music starts to speed up. As does the two enemies left. They become almost frantic in trying to reach you. Once you've destroyed one of the last two, the other enemy will normally attempt to hightail it off the screen. If the Pooka or Fygar is moving through the dirt, the undug areas of the stage, they will be a little slower, and they do lose some speed once they reach the surface. You won't lose a life or anything if your enemy escapes, but you will have missed out on some points. Since we're on the subject of points, Dig Dug awards you different amounts of points depending on where you killed your enemy. You see, a stage is made up of four different colored layers of dirt. The further down you are when you dispatch a foe, the more points you will get. In addition, if you take out a Fygar horizontally, since it's more dangerous that way with its fire, the player is awarded more points than blowing it up vertically. It breaks down like this. Taking out a Pooka on the ground or first layer will get you 200 points. On the second layer, you earn 300 points. Taking out a Pooka on the third layer gets you 400 points. And blowing one up at the fourth layer will bestow 500 points. Doing that horizontally with a Fygar on those levels will get you 400, 600, 800, and 1,000 points. As you can probably guess, each additional stage will add an increased number of enemies. For myself, around the 12th stage, I'm too busy trying to stay alive, and I will just dispatch the Pookas and Fygars any way I can, regardless of what points I can earn. Sorry about all the score talk, friends, but it is kind of an important part of Dig Dug. With its colorful and rather cute character designs, it's easy to pick up, but hard to master. For what it's worth, Donald Hayes holds the world record on Dig Dug with 5,147,610 points. In fact, you can totally watch the 5-hour and 12-minute video of it on the Twin Galaxies site. At the Arcadia Retrocade, I believe the high score holder is Michael Dietrich. At the time of this recording, I'm unable to get to the scoreboard and check that out. Now then, we're going to do something a little different for our commercial break this time because, with Dig Dug, Atari did an amazing thing back in 1982. Bear with me here. Imagine sitting with my family at the 62 Drive-In. This is a place as equally special to me as my local Showbiz Pizza. If you've ever listened to the Saturday Frights podcast, you will hear me talk about that drive-in quite a bit. Anyway, after the first movie was over, I want to say it was Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, and we were watching local advertisements and previews for coming attractions before Megaforce started, a very odd-looking trailer showed up on the drive-in screen. It was a live-action ad for Atari's Dig Dug. Here's a brief clip.
I want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for attending the third international conference on science and technology this afternoon.
What the heck is that?
Well, I don't know, but that's another one.
Good gracious, there goes another one.
They're multiplying.
Interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin. Mysterious underground creatures are moving your way.
We have a problem here.
Come on, everybody. Take a chance. We're going underground to do the Dig Dug Dance.
I'm sure many of you have seen that commercial for yourself. The making of it was even featured on Entertainment Tonight back in the day. Much like the Intellivision commercial that was produced for theaters, I kind of lost my mind when I saw that Dig Dug ad. So much so that I begged my father to take me back again the next week so I could record the song on my tape player. But did you know that the music that was originally going to be used in the Dig Dug commercial was provided by none other than Chubby Checker? That is 100% true, friends. Best of all, back in 2014, Matt Osborne, The son of the original vice president of Atari, Don Osborne, who sadly passed away in 1983, totally uploaded the song off the original tape provided by Crushing Entertainment, recorded on June 14th, 1982. I know it's just a little over 2 minutes, but it's just too awesome not to share the whole thing. In an interview with the Video Game Preservation Dump, Matt said, quote, "My father, Don Osborne, was vice president of Atari at the time, and he brought this home one day for us to listen to. I'm not sure how I actually ended up with it, but he may have lent it to me, and I just never gave it back, or he never asked for it to be returned. The only info that I have about it was that Atari had envisioned a somewhat 50s-styled take on the song, inspired in part by Chubby Checker's hit, The Twist." End quote. I'll be sure to include a link to the Video Game Preservation Dump interview on the Retroist post for this episode, so you can read the full thing. In 1985, Dig Dug 2 was released to the arcades in Japan, with it debuting on the Nintendo Entertainment System here in North America in 1989. Sadly, the sequel didn't garner as much praise as the original version. But that doesn't mean that Dig Dug's legacy was over. For one thing, the character has appeared in other Namco games, but now he is known as Teizo Hori and happens to be the ex-husband of the heroine of Baraduk, as well as the father of the main character of the Mr. Driller series. A game as popular as Dig Dug was in the arcades meant that it naturally was going to be getting home ports on the popular home computers and consoles of the day, such as the Atari 2600, 5200, 7800, and Atari home computers. The Apple II received a port, as did the Commodore 64 and VIC-20, as well as the IBM PC. The Fujitsu 7, as well as the 77, received ports, as did the MSX and TI-99. For what it's worth, the Intellivision saw a port of Dig Dug, but it didn't get published until 1987. It looks like AtariSoft worked on a version for the ColecoVision, but that sadly never saw the light of day. At least, so some sources say, where others say it was just an extremely rare game release. In this particular case, I'm going to say it was probably never released to the general public. Dig Dug has also made an appearance on the Nintendo Famicom, as well as the Game Boy and Game Boy Advanced. A plug-and-play version was created, and a version of the game has been made available on Xbox and Xbox One, as well as the PlayStation 4 and even Steam, as part of the Bandai Namco's arcade game series. Here at the Arcadia Retrocade, Dig Dug was one of the first 50 machines we opened with at the arcade. It shares a spot of honor with two other Atari-released games, Centipede and Arabian. It's an incredibly popular game still, with players of all ages. Oh, just as I was about to record this episode, I received an email question from Toby Manchess on the Diary of an Arcade Employee Facebook page. He asked, what was my absolute favorite thing about the arcade? Friends, the answer might be a groaner, but here's the truth. Working there with my fellow employees feels like I'm working with family. No egos are running rampant, no backstabbing, no drama, like I have experienced at other places I've worked. That is something special, to say the very least. The truth is, Shay, Ree, Hannah, Madeline, John, and Adam are all devoted to keeping the dream of the arcade alive and well. Heck, they do all the hard work. I jokingly call myself a plug-and-play, which is true. Do you need to slot me in to work the snack bar? No problem. Need me to cover the front? I'm happy to do so. And friends, I think that about brings us to the end of the episode. You can find out more about the Arcadia Retrocade by visiting Facebook, or for almost daily posts, you can check out the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast Facebook page. I share all manner of vintage arcade and home console fun multiple times a day. If you have any feedback or comments about the podcast, you can always reach me on Facebook or throw me an email at vicsage@retroist.com. You also can often find me posting videos of the arcade on my Instagram account, which you can find just by searching for Vic Sage. I, of course, want to thank the Retroist, not just for hosting the show, but for providing a spot on the internet where you can visit throughout the week to find some of the best retro-related articles and podcasts. The Diary of an Arcade Employee is available on iTunes. So, if you have a moment, why not help us get the word out on the show by leaving a review and some comments? Until next time, friends, have a token on me as you hear a clip from the subject of a future episode. This has been a Retroist production. Thank you for listening, and have a better one. Goodbye.
End of line.